One of them wanted to be the security guy. He claimed he was a security guy.
Hey, welcome everybody to another exciting edition of Security Guy Ready with your host, Chuck Harold. And today we're going to talk about not that graphic, but this graphic right here. Peter, I always get these things wrong. Today we're going to talk about critical incident management. And I got a special guest today, Peter. Now, Peter, give me your last name.
Matuchniak.
Matuchniak. It sounds so easy when you say it. I have to work on that.
It's just four syllables.
That's true. That is a good way to think about it, four syllables. So we're going to talk about critical incident management. And explain what that is to everybody. It sounds so easy to say, but it really involves a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, I think it means a lot of different things to different people. But I think ultimately it's kind of a situational awareness in a critical mode, knowing what's going on, where people are, where resources are, where, you know, trouble spots are, and being able to efficiently and intelligently manage that situation. So I think that's one good definition that I think would resonate with a lot of people.
Now, my favorite movie is The Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. Remember Batman? Did you see it? Batman?
I think I saw it and probably fell asleep through it. It was one of those days when I took my kids and I needed a nap.
Oh, well, that does happen. That does happen. So there was a scene in there at the end where Mr. Fox turned on all the phones in Gotham City and used them as listening devices, video. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're getting there, aren't we, with technology?
We are.
And your company, Ambit, is working. It's not that elaborate, but that's kind of the general idea, right?
Yeah.
Connect people together with their phones and incidents and be aware of what's going on. It's a good way to describe it.
Exactly, yeah. Well, the company's actually Maxis Systems, and Ambit is our direction of going away from the traditional security elements with the fixed cameras and the door access and knowing when a door's been broken into a more mobile-oriented one where we're not only using the mobile device as a sensor, we're using the kind of the eyes and ears of human beings to intelligently kind of assess a situation. So there's a bit of fuzzy logic in there, not just from a computer perspective, but the people out there in the field with their mobile phones, which they are voluntarily bringing to work and adding all this eyes and ears that we can tap into.
Now, you brought us a video we can take a look at, right?
Sure, go ahead.
Let's take a quick look at that so we get this to play. All right, here we go. Take a look at this.
Ambit adds the human element to security systems. Only people can anticipate danger and sense something is wrong. And Ambit enables them to become part of the solution, thereby creating a proactive security environment. Ambit provides a private, secure, two-way messaging system that connects organizations with their people and with their systems. All messaging is structured and auditable. Ambit provides any organization with a more complete real-time picture of its situational awareness.
We might have had a little bit of a technical playback problem on that, but that's Security Guy Radio's fault, not yours. So it gives us a good overview of what the system does. So why don't you walk us through it from your perspective as me being a user. Mm-hmm. Now, and by the way, who do you target as your audience for this? Is it the big enterprise-wide system? Is it an average user or private?
Definitely it's a private and intended for the corporate kind of environment rather than the consumer environment. And the we're looking at different verticals. One of obviously is the kind of the K-12 or campus type of vertical, but we're also looking at regular traditional businesses, and that could really be any kind of business, which presents a problem for us or a challenge for us, if you will, in that each environment is very, very different. We've talked to school districts, we've talked to law enforcement people, and they have particular rules and regulations and policies and procedures that you can't just kind of go around and do differently. You have to kind of go through the way that they do things normally and intelligently adjust that. So that's kind of moving more slowly for us, but there's a lot of interest in that area, and I think ultimately that might be one of our strongest areas. But regular corporations, that's definitely
right. So using intelligence and the city and government is kind of an oxymoron a little bit, but I appreciate that challenge. What is the resistance with the groups? I know they think they have to do things a certain way, but the certain way is the old way. And they need a model. Are you finding there's not a model for the new way? That's what I find.
A model for the new way. And I think that the challenge that we come up against, and it's a valid one, it's not that the way that things are done today is wrong, is that they've been tried and trusted and tested in the field in real-world scenarios. And we're coming with something that hasn't been proven yet, and I think ultimately it will, and it will prevail. There's no doubt in my mind it will. When you've got eyes and ears and mobile phones, I mean, we had the terrorist attack in London back in 7/7, when people using their mobile phones underground and videoing live what they were seeing underground. That's something you never normally would have access to. So that's only going to become more of the norm. But how to integrate that in a way that doesn't confuse law enforcement is something that is a challenge for us. We've got to make it where it's the obvious thing. 911 is so ingrained in us, it's an obvious thing to do. And I'd still tell my kids, use that first, because that's what we understand. Right. But there'll come a time where I think we'll say, this might be a better way of going about things, because it puts your location into perspective, it puts your video feed, your messaging. We can now have a one-to-one, or even not even just a one-to-one conversation. I could be communicating with you, but there could be 10 law enforcement people watching the communication go back and forth, which I think is an important angle when you're trying to mobilize resources to help.
So I'll tell you what I think the resistance is. So let's give a thumbnail sketch of the product, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm Sensegawa Studios here, right? Mm-hmm. And I have a bunch of people that work in here in different groups, by the way. I'm mm-hmm. my own production company. There's other production companies. But we're still inside this physical environment.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be good for the studio to be able to get a hold of everybody if there's some kind of incident on a stage. So that can happen with your product, correct?
Correct.
Even though I'm a separate corporation, a separate entity. So now I got the private sector part handled. On the connection to public entities, for first responders, let's call them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, it could be police, fire, medical, whatever it is, right? Your system connects to that and puts us together so we all communicate for a critical incident, right?
That would be the ideal scenario for
right.
us. I mean, obviously, if within the entity of the corporation, it can have its own benefits.
Yeah.
But if we can broadcast that out to, law enforcement people that are on their way, all the better. And the more that we can integrate it, I think we can help, but definitely don't want to hinder.
Yeah, and I think the resistance is they feel, and I was a cop, right? And
mm-hmm.
I was a dispatcher. And they still call, a friend of mine just retired, Donna. Hello, Miss Donna, because I know you're watching. Congratulations. She retired from Culver City after 35 years.
Oh, congratulations.
We have
fantastic.
Just a couple of pups when we started there a long time ago. And they still called their dispatch system CAD,
mm-hmm.
which stands for Computer Aided Dispatch.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Computer Aided. Wow. What amazing technology. But back in 1980-something, when that came out, that was remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, oh, a computer, and we can put calls in there. They still think it's called CAD, and they still think it's computer-aided, and they don't want anybody else touching it. First of all, because it's 30 years old and it'll probably break, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is just one department. There's other departments that have more modern things. But there's a fear that the connectivity compromises security, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't get that part. Tell a public entity how a system like this, how that security part's handled. I think that's important for them to understand.
Yeah, well, we use everything we communicate over our system is over HTTPS, which is basically a fancy way of saying we have a secure, encrypted management of the information
right.
going back and forth. So I think we would never want to subvert that. But I think any time there's a communication between point A and an external one, point B, there was always a risk. I mean,
always.
Banks get hacked, governments get hacked,
yeah.
you know. So there is that risk. The thing is to try and minimize it and outweigh it with a lot of benefits. So I think providing more information about, a school that has lots of children running around in a panic, knowing where they are and what their situation is very valuable. And if there's a minimal risk of the communication being compromised, if as long as we can minimize that and save lives, that would be obviously beneficial.
Now, would it, when you say it could be connected to a first responder public entity, would it be connected to each individual officer's phone? That's a possibility, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you could break up the security and access levels, or maybe the dispatcher is the only one that has it, although not as valuable, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about how we're working towards public entities.
Mm-hmm.
That's maybe a little way off. It's
mm-hmm.
possible, it's technical, we're there, but of course they're going to take 5 years to catch up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So talk about how an average corporation, let's say the studio, and I gave you that example where we have a landlord who rents to a bunch of us, right? And we all want to be in that system because since we are so diverse here and all have our own production companies, even a better reason to have this kind of system. Tell us how that might work inside a studio environment with 10 different production companies in here.
It's an interesting question because normally we would just target an organization and a single entity, even though they may share a building. But there's no reason why a building couldn't be that organization, and each company within would be seen as a separate department or site by us. I think the thing is firstly, the way the system started out and the way that would be a benefit is if you're a lone worker and you're worried about going into the parking lot at night, we have a button, two levels, a low-level and a high-level security kind of setting, where you can say, just monitor my location as I go to my car or I go to a part of the building right. that I feel unsafe in at late at night. So a security guard can immediately be put on alert because that will go to his screen or his phone and alert them that someone is not feeling comfortable. If they elevate that to help, now you then elevate your response to it. But it's something nice to know that there's someone watching your shoulder as you're walking across the building or walking into a dark parking lot, either on a camera or just knowing that you're doing that activity. Then when you get to your car or to your destination in the building to say, I'm done, I've got there, I'm safe. Just those eyes and ears are a nice part of this system. But we all can also turn it the other way around where the organization can say something just happened. It could be an earthquake, it could be a shooter or a strange sure. person was seen. We want to broadcast the message. Now, there are lots of mass notification systems, and we'd hardly want to compete at that level in one dimension.
Yeah, just so everybody's clear, this is not, well, it is a mass notification system in one way, but that's not really the point of it.
I think of it more of a mass awareness yeah. rather than mass notification. Mass notification tends to be one way, and I've received those messages at home on my phone where the police say, last night there was a burglary and just want to let you know. But there's no ability for me to respond and then the police force to aggregate the responses from the neighbors. So what we would do is we would send out the message, something's afoot, and people can then respond based on a custom form that says, yes, I know about it, no, I don't know about it, I saw someone the other day. Whatever the responses make sense for you, each one's a custom message that goes out. Now that the organization can quickly aggregate those responses and on a map show where people are. And if people don't respond, let's say 10% of your population doesn't respond, and this is a pretty serious situation that's unfolding, well, we'd look at our system and say, what was the activity with those 10% of the people? And we've shifted our system from just being this critical thing to something more operational. So you can check into work, check out of work, say I'm going on a break with your time and location there. You can also say, I would like to report some graffiti or I need help with my computer system. There's all these different forms that you can fill out that get routed to certain individuals, which help the efficiency of the organization. But in an emergency, it's very valuable to know what someone was doing 5 minutes ago. They're not responding. Right. There's a shooter on campus. But 5 minutes ago, that teacher went out to the supply cabinet and said, I need help with the Wi-Fi. You know, as silly as that seems, it's something useful rather than, I don't know where they went. They went somewhere, and I don't know what happened to them.
Well, now, this is really interesting because if I take this application and I disconnect it from first responders, mm-hmm. it's probably going to happen. Most mm-hmm. corporations probably will not be connected to a first responder yet. We're going to work yeah. on that part. Mm-hmm. But when first responders show up, I now have a phone I can hand them and say, here you go. Mm-hmm. Here's where we're missing six employees. And by the way, employee number 20 who told me he saw employee number one, that guy was the shooter. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could have all kinds of information yeah. flowing to this central place, and then they can use it for the command post. So I think that's really critical. The reason I use the studio for an example is because of all the different production companies and people in here. It's almost more important for a place like this mm-hmm. to have something like that
yeah.
than one corporation, because one corporation would have an alert system, a phoning system that sends out a voice broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gower, Sunset Gower Studios may have that. They probably do. But once you send a message out, there's been an earthquake. Yeah. No kidding, right? Because my whole studio collapsed. Or there's a fire. Really? Because I'm kind of hot. It's important, but mm-hmm. it's not interactive.
Yes.
You know, and that's the whole level. Now, let's talk about security. Let's talk about how all that works. This resides on your servers. Where's the redundant servers? You know, because there's a lot of techies out there who like to know that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So we have cloud servers that manage this, and we have a bit of redundancy on the system to manage if one system goes down, we have another one that kicks in. We have had some people ask us about hosting it on their own private network, which we can accommodate. Obviously, the more we go the cloud route, the easier it is for us to add features and more support.
Right.
And people are getting more comfortable with that environment. But I also understand why they want to have it indoors. And the security systems we sell are hosted indoors. So we would quite happily package the system up and have it run locally as well.
I'm so torn on this one system, two system. You know, it's your system, it's a cloud, because, mm-hmm. well, you're old enough to know what hierarchy storage management was.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have dumb terminals. They mm-hmm. didn't save anything. You couldn't do anything on them. And they all went to a big room down the hall with a giant computer that had 25 megabytes on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But very secure.
Mm-hmm.
And now we go to the cloud with all this ability to connect things, but not as secure, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if you bring all these sort of systems like yours in-house, frankly, I think you're running more of a risk of functional failure and not letting the system work. But yeah. I am torn between it. I can see why a company would want to have their own people touching it and working it. But you'd give them an option. You know, if it's a big enough enterprise and they got the money, write me a check. What the heck? You know?
Yeah, and I think it comes back to what we were talking about, you know, the resistance from even from law enforcement and so on. And there perhaps is a bit of bureaucracy in there, but I think there's also a little bit of resistance because it's what people don't understand. And I totally respect that.
Yeah.
Until you're comfortable with understanding what you're giving up to what you're getting, don't take that route, obviously. But when you are comfortable and you understand a little bit more about whether a cloud server can be more secure versus your own environment, I'm not saying it's more secure in every situation, but a lot of people host their own systems that are much more hackable and much less secure.
Completely. And by the way, they hire some third party that is a security provider, right,
mm-hmm.
for hacking or network protection or firewall protection, whatever. Very few people do that all themselves. There's no reason to because mm-hmm. there's geniuses out there. I saw a Black Hat. You know, did you go to Black Hat?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you got to go to Black Hat. Man, the collective brain power in that place is unbelievable.
Yeah.
So let's give somebody a example of the tragedy at this school. Right, mm-hmm. In San Bernardino. You're familiar with the case,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah.
Let's talk about how we could apply something like this to that system. And when people tell me, I hear this on the news all the time, oh, that was not preventable. You know what? Not completely. All right?
Mm-hmm.
I think we could have mitigated. I think we could have done a lot of things to slow it down so we could have a faster response. Maybe there could have been an intervention. And I'm not saying your product is going to prevent things like that, but mm-hmm. it's sure going to help. So let's talk about how you would apply that to a school.
Okay.
And, you know, it starts at the principal's office, the teachers have it. I mean, how would that work? How would the system work? And what benefit would they get in a school environment?
Well, I think the first thing is if they're using it just as a security high, you know, alert system, it can very easily get forgotten unless they're trained in it. And that worries me about, you know, training people on something. And then when something happens, now they've got to remember to get to their phone and press
right.
a button. So I'm very cognizant of that as an issue. So a few different things that we've thought about in that vein. One is using your keyboard with a, you know, you could hit Control or P to say panic, Control or E to say emergency or whatever. So we have something that will use your keyboard as if it were a mobile device with a location programmed into the systems to know this keyboard in this classroom has just sent this alert, which I think would be valuable, especially if you're afraid to take out your phone or you're not thinking, your hands
right.
on the keyboard. Or a panic button that could send out the broadcast and contact, you know, a 911 message and alert everyone with a survey, which immediately people respond as their location. So when,
oh, a survey like no gunshots over here, no gunshots here.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, gunshots over here.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Wow.
Now we've just implemented and we're testing out indoor location capabilities. So with the geolocation, I know a lot of people say it's great when I'm outdoors, but when I'm indoors, it doesn't really know where I am, if it can even tell I'm indoors.
Yeah. Some systems are better than others. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're looking at this indoor location capability, which coupled with these Bluetooth beacons, which can position around the building, can tell where you are pretty accurately. We tested it at the ISC show in Las Vegas, and we mapped out an area within an hour, and we're able to have 2 to 3 meters of accuracy most of the time.
Wow. And by the way, let's convert that for our non-British friends. 2 to 3 meters is 9 yards
or whatever. 2 to 3 yards.
2 to 3 yards. Okay, good.
A meter is kind of like a yard. You have to remember that. I grew up at school where we were just changing over, so I'm all confused myself.
We'll change someday, but right.
So
that's very accurate. That's very accurate.
Yeah. So it doesn't always work as well as that. So that's the thing we're working on with the beacons and other forms of technology using your Wi-Fi router to know more about where you are. But the ability to pinpoint you inside a building, if this had happened, you know, in a school scenario where something is unfolding,
right.
The first step is to be able to tell exactly where people are, even which floor they're on. But if we can also then put in a floor plan that helps guide people, and this is, I'm talking 6 months, 12 months on our roadmap, but can help guide people around the building and use a blockage as saying this is something you want to avoid. The blockage could be the toilet is broken, there's a strange guy, or there's a shooter, anything. It's just saying you need to go around this. to effectively and quickly manage large groups of kids or teachers out when they're, you know, because in that situation, I'm sure I've been in the moments where you're white with fear and you can't think straight. If something can just tell you go left, go right, or even if on your phone had an arrow said go this way, that would be a whole lot better than just sitting there with like a deer in headlights
exactly.
type of a situation. But there are a few other things that I think where we're looking at with Ambit that we think could help in this situation. It's not just at the moment that it's happening, it's before and after. The thing about after, obviously, is being able to do a post-mortem. What went wrong? What went right? What could have been done better for the next time? And I know whenever there's a situation, there's typically a post-mortem, whether it's a corporate thing or it's a safety thing.
Yeah, and there's no data. You have to run around and ask people yeah. to do interviews, and you're missing things.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. we have a lot of data at a very atomic level, you know, where people were, what the location was, the time of the day was, what were they doing, that kind of stuff. As much as you enter into the system, that's what we capture. So to be able to go back and actually hit a play button, maybe in slow or fast motion, and see where the dots move on the map, see what data was occurring, what messages were coming in, and say this was the moment where the system could have been better or policies and procedures could have been better, I think that's very valuable. But I'm also very interested, and this probably will take a year or two for us to build out, is an analytical model that starts predicting this kind of stuff.
Yes, I've spoken to a lot of people about that, and that is a very real I'm not going to say a probability. It's happening now to some level. There's artificial learning.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, you know what? You have 600 parents come to the school every day, and 550 are women, and, you know, the rest are men.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know what? If a whole bunch of men showed up one day, that might be suspicious.
Suspicious.
Yeah, exactly. And then we have to do something about that and think, you know what, that's not our norm. Let's look at that data, real-time analytics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's brilliant. That's very, very necessary.
Exactly. And if you know, we were actually talking with a company where they were saying that, you know, occasionally homeless people move into the area. And it's not that, let's say, the homeless people are the trouble, but they start, you know, having kind of issues with each other, which then spill into the company itself.
Right.
And so they say, you know, we've seen this pattern happen at many, many of our sites. And so I was thinking, well, if people were reporting, hey, I'm seeing a lot of graffiti, I'm seeing a lot of whatever, you know, stray people moving around. And the last time this happened, when this combination of activities happened within a 24-hour window, within a 5-mile radius or 1-mile radius, the next day there was a fight in the parking lot. A bit of a you know, silly example, but next time that same pattern of activity happens, we could say, hey, you know what, 24 hours is a 50% probability there's going to be a fight in the parking lot or something will unfold.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And now, the more data you capture, the more able you are, like with credit card companies.
Yeah.
I mean, they almost know that something's wrong.
They
you know?
Do know.
Yeah.
I drive around the country a lot, and every time I get to 2 or 3 gas stations within 4 or 5 hours, they turn my card off.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, is that you pumping gas? Yes, it's me pumping gas. They're very accurate within minutes sometimes. Of recognizing that. So there's no reason we can't do that with other data.
Mm-hmm.
And we should. Now, let's talk about a couple of legal things. Do you run up against legal roadblocks in any states, any cities, about, I don't know, privacy, data collection, you know, that kind of stuff? I know you can't do it in Germany, because Germany doesn't let you save anything for more than 30 days or something, right? So
yeah,
there's, around the world there's different. What there's about different. The United States? How are we doing with that kind of stuff here?
We haven't gotten out far enough. We have a few companies that have installed this and mostly are in trial mode, and we've had a few that are kind of using it actively. They've been okay with it because I guess the way that they're using it, there hasn't been an issue with their employee workforce or the limited usage they've had it.
Right.
But we have spoken to companies where the first thing everyone says, well, I don't know if I want my company to know exactly where I am all the time. And what we try and point out is they don't know unless you volunteer it. If you say, I would like to check into work, I would like to report an issue. But you're kind of doing that anyway. The minute you enter the building, if you've used your access card, you've told them you're on site.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and there are cameras around. So I'm one of those people, I warn my kids about, you know, the privacy issues that when you're on Facebook or any kind of social media, there is no privacy.
Even there if isn't any figure, privacy. And you don't own that image, by the way.
No, yeah. There's a lot of that it doesn't seem intuitive to us, but it's the reality. But we're getting more comfortable with it. Where I was 5 years ago and where I am now is like, I don't know if there's anything for me to hide at this point because, you know, even if I send a picture privately on Facebook Messenger, my assumption is it's out in the world.
That's right.
And it's better to think that way. And I think with corporations, maybe we're getting a little bit more comfortable with that idea, for better or for worse. I'm not saying it's a good thing, but they definitely, with the cameras that are on outside, the access card letting you in and out, the fact that you're even on your phone on Wi-Fi, firstly, they know you're on the system because of the Wi-Fi. Secondly,
that's right.
What websites you're using, and so on. So,
and by the way, if you bring the phone to work and it's your phone and you use it on their network, legally in California, they have access to all that data.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And the reason they do it is because they don't want to spend, you know, Fox had 5,000 employees. They don't want to buy 5,000 phones anymore like they used to.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants to carry two phones.
Yes.
So if it's bring your own device, mm-hmm. then you sometimes they compensate you half your phone bill or something like that, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're looking at it anyway. That's why I look at it.
So I think...
But opt-out's the best thing.
Exactly. And I don't think this would necessarily be an invasion of privacy. I would hope it wouldn't be. I mean, that's not what we're trying to sell here. But on the other hand, I think what we'd need to do is do an education and have people fully understand what they're buying into. And again, it's that whole, okay, I'm letting the company know I'm checking into work or checking out of work, or I want to, when I report an issue, I'll have my location. But the benefit of that is knowing where you are with that issue, and if something breaks out, that we know where to find you if there's trouble.
How far away do you think we are from making these kind of things, you know, mandatory? I mean, it used to be that you didn't have to have security. Nowadays, you don't have security, and everybody else around you does because there's a good reason you should. Mm-hmm. You could be in trouble for it. We're not there yet with these type of devices, but I think we're moving that direction. Would you agree?
I think so.
You're going to have something on your campus. You can't just say, you know, not our responsibility not to have security or device or the ability to monitor things. Not my problem. I'm just the boss. You know, I don't think they can get away with that anymore.
I think it's on a case-by-case basis, and I think it's the expectation of you when you're on the campus versus a corporate building or entity, and, you know, what liabilities the corporation has or the campus has versus what liabilities you hold. I think if you're going to hold the campus in a kind of a situation where you're expecting them to do something, then they might have to have a reasonable expectation that you do something too,
right,
to be a part of that security solution. But I don't know. It's a hard one for me. I don't know if it's really going to be. I think it's going to be on a case by case basis based on the organization and what their expectations are.
Could you see this being used, you know, by the government? I mean, in theory, could the government buy it, and anybody that wanted to opt into a government version of this, could they use it for national awareness?
You know, it's funny you should say that. There is a country somewhere in Latin America where we are actually, I think, talking about something very similar.
Oh, very
to that.
Interesting.
And I don't know. It's a big undertaking, but I think it's an interesting idea. To
Well, technically possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's we're going from now from thousands of people to in a corporate environment to possibly millions. So I don't know to what extent they would manage to spread it out to that level, but I can see a lot of benefits. You know, me personally, if there was something like this, I think I can see a lot of benefits to it. I mean, we already, just to interject, we already have the 1-800 I see graffiti on the freeway type of phone numbers, but this has this kind of thing built in. There's two different types of things you can report. One is a situation where you need help, like I need help with IT, or I need medical assistance, or I need help with my insurance forms. And then there's the other kind of help, which is I want to help the company with something that's of no immediate value to me, but just, you know, a sense of community, which is I see graffiti, I see a broken window, I was cleaning the hotel and the door looked like it was broken. And a lot of times you can just walk past that kind of stuff. But if there was a button on your phone say, like, I just want to say it and then see it say it, basically.
Right.
I want to do an eyewitness account of something. We will let you do that and you can just go about your merry way knowing that it's been taken care of.
Yeah, it could be mostly anonymous, all right? Because nothing's completely anonymous, as we all know this day and age, but anonymous reporting of, you know, this is a picture. If you think it looks like a duck, you guys can do something about it. Otherwise, I'm going to Starbucks because I'm busy and I got to look at my Facebook for 3 minutes. Short attention spans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody told me the other day that there are, what did they say? 2.6 billion phones in the world now?
I can believe it.
That's close. It's approaching, you know, a third of the population or almost half the population of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 10 years ago, it probably wasn't a billion. It's exponentially growing. So eventually every single person on Earth is going to have a phone,
mm-hmm.
just for whatever reason, because of government, because of whatever. Well, not every single, but mostly, right? And then that's a whole other thing.
Mm-hmm.
The whole world could be connected instantly to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think that's going to be artificial intelligence. Convergence, right? Where
mm-hmm.
everybody has the same access to the same knowledge. I don't know. You should see what happens.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about that. That, you know, we're talking about having it in the government situation and with a country. Imagine, remember when there was that the floods in Japan when the water was coming in?
Oh, yeah.
and how every second count, I've seen those videos where the cars are driving down the road and then suddenly they're doing U-turns and then the water just comes down the road. Horrific scenes. Right. And how every second counted for those people that didn't manage to do the U-turn versus those that did. And if something were to go out, I mean, we already have the Amber Alert, which I think is kind of going down that path, but it's still a kind of a one-way type of quick transmission. If you could have something that could come back to the organization as well, you could now not only know, alert people, hey, you need to get out there because the floods are coming, but also to know who really is in a dire situation and who else you need to go and tackle that hasn't responded yet.
Yeah, very interesting. Now, let's talk about pricing. Security Guy TV can't afford this yet, but I'm hoping soon, right? But what, and you don't have to give me quotes or anything. What I'm kind of getting at is, you know, what are the basic parameters on how it's work? Is it a subscription? Is it a per user on the phone, on the network, or how does it work?
Yeah, obviously, I mean, I will answer the question. It's not my department, being the CTO of the company. Yeah. But the basic idea is to try and make it a percentage of what a company would typically spend on a phone for an employee.
Oh, that's interesting.
So,
okay.
And to also kind of encourage them to see that this is really not going to be a big bottom line. We host the cloud servers. We manage the software. So really the service that we're providing to you through all this is only asking for a small amount per user. And obviously the more users you have in an organization, the lower the price becomes. But just to give you an idea, let's say a company spends $100 a month on your cell phone.
That's probably reasonable, yeah.
We may ask for, and I'm going to throw a number out here, $1 a month or $5 a month, depending on the size of your organization.
That's very reasonable.
Yeah. So if you have thousands of employees, the price goes down. If you have 10 or 15, it's probably not really at that point worth our while just yet, just because the support-related issues wouldn't cover the cost.
Now, explain to me the difference between a CTO and a CISO, because people get those mixed up. Some are merged, I guess, but the separate functions are two distinct things.
Yeah. Well, I'm chief technology officer, and in a really huge company with, like, you know, a Google-sized company, I probably would not be doing a lot of things I'm doing right now, which is I do get my hand dirty in the code, and I do make a lot of low-level decisions. But a chief technology officer kind of guides the technology choices of the company and the direction, not just technology, but also the, you know, how the technology is used and implemented. But in this case, I'm, you know, doing it at the high level, but I'm also doing it down the low level. I do a lot of the development myself.
So it's kind of in the, a CTO is kind of more in the manufacturing side of it. Is that a good way to say it? CISO might be more on the defensive side, the maintenance side.
It's really just more from the whole programming and software engineering side of things. That's the
programming, okay.
Yeah, programming, right. Yeah. The top guy in that hierarchy, I guess, below vice president or president.
Right. And how long have you been doing this?
This particular system, I've been here a few years. We started off as a small R&D project built around a single button which would say, I need help.
Yeah.
And my concern back then was people will forget to use it unless it has day-to-day kind of operational activities and it will be enhanced by that. So I've been doing this for a few years. More seriously, as the company's taken it forward in the last couple of years, we've been getting a lot of traction. And we think that this could be the next phase of our security system at Maxis. As a software engineer, I've been doing this for about 30 years. I started 2 years.
30 years, wow.
Yeah.
So do you remember what the program Volkswriter was? Do you remember Volkswriter? That's before Word came out.
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah, so they had, you know, Microsoft had DOS, right?
Yeah.
And then IBM had ISO, wonderful. And then there was a little program called Volkswriter.
Yeah, I kind of remember it.
Yeah, it's, so you remember DOS and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally different environment.
I started in England. I was born and raised and educated there, and I started working.
The people that invented the computer.
Did they?
Oh, right.
I didn't know that.
Well, what's that movie with the guy?
Turing.
Turing machine.
Yes, that was
amazing.
It was amazing.
It was basically a mechanical computer.
Yes, but a very, very intelligent guy. But they also say some of the whole punch cards things dates back to the Ellis Island, people coming through, and when they wanted to know, you know, the characteristics, hair color, eye color, if they had any diseases, they would have these punch cards with holes in them.
Oh.
And where the metal prongs would come through, it would light up a board, so someone could instantly see details about you. That was one of the first profile.
Oh, very interesting.
So that, I think it was one of the James Burke Connection TV series, was mentioning how that ended up becoming punch cards in a COBOL or Fortran-based programming system.
Technology is fascinating. I just love it. Tell us some more things about what the overall company does. What else does it produce as far as products and things like that?
The company itself has been around 10, 15 years, and they sell a product called eFusion, which is a security-based product that integrates with any kind of hardware or software. So if you have a camera from a different company and they have their own proprietary software, well, our software can also integrate that camera from a lot of disparate different manufacturers.
Well, that's so important nowadays because they're, you know, you come into an old system and a sales guy is going to tell you, you got to buy a whole new thing mm-hmm. and buy all my cameras, and not necessarily true anymore. Correct. Integration, they call it a graphic user interface, right?
Mm-hmm. GUI,
yeah.
Yeah, so you can pick and choose what the cameras and the door sensors and access control management software that we also manage, all the people and what buildings and times that they can access the buildings. So I know less about that system other than from a more high-level view, but that's basically what they do. And obviously integrating different hardware peripherals is an important part of their business. That's where they get a lot of the business on that side. For me, it's interesting with Ambit because we use eFusion as a way to show how we integrate with what apparently is an external system but looks like a single one. And I'll give you an example. If you break a door in the system, eFusion will notify the security manager that
right.
The security guard that a door has been broken at this particular point. But then that's where it stops on that side of the system. What we showed at ISC and we've showed at previous shows is that message will now come to Ambit and broadcast the survey to say, by the way, a door's been broken on building 3, you know, door 106, and if you're near there, you may want to get away, or if you see any trouble, let us know, and so on. So now it goes out to Ambit. Now, as those responses are coming back in, we could aggregate them and send them back into eFusion to say, here's an aggregation of the responses. So that whole second part was not really there previously. Flip it around, we can do something on Ambit and say, I just saw a door broken, or I just saw some graffiti. That message can go into the eFusion system because we can send... Ambit itself is an integrated tool. So we can send that information into eFusion and the security guard can see that pop up on the screen. So both ways enhance that one system, but we can do that with any system. It doesn't have to be our own.
I forgot to ask you earlier, is there a, I guess you'd call it a dead man switch function on this? And what I'm thinking of is this. I you know, I'm here at the studio and I'm walking to my car and, you know, Hollywood's not the greatest area, by mm-hmm. the way, okay? And not that Security Guy TV is afraid of anybody. And by the way, we have a different sort of security.
I feel safe here.
Well, yeah, we have a different sort of security in here, as you might imagine. Mm-hmm. No offense, but mm-hmm. my little thing I have over there is probably more effective. But I'm thinking, you know, ease of use. And, you know, I'm logged in, and I push the button, and I hold the button.
Mm-hmm.
And then if something happens, if I let go of the button, now it activates. Because it is difficult. Time, security and safety is all about time management.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have to say, you know, don't mug me, I got to get my button out here, hold on a second, that's not going to work, right? So I'm just curious if it has a, I call it a dead man switch, but I'm mm-hmm. not sure what else you would call
I think
it.
The problems with Android and particularly iPhones is that they've become very much of a lock system. So your ability to override what a button does is different from the old Windows mobile phones, you know, version 6 or whatever. However, there are a lot of devices coming out which are probably better suited to this, one of which being kind of some kind of a pendant of a button you could press.
Yeah, wearable, they call it.
Yeah. And it could be your watch, for example. We could write software, which one of the things I'm looking at is for the Apple Watch, and I'll probably end up doing it for the Android, is to be able to just hit a button on your watch. But it could be a pendant that's a button you press and hold for 1 second, you send out a certain alert, hold for 2 seconds, elevate the alert, whatever it might be. And those devices are now... I think within the next year or two, you're going to see them coming with GPS capabilities, or they already have GPS, but they will have 4GE capabilities or 3G capabilities where they will be able to communicate. Even if you left your phone at home, you could press your pendant around your neck and it would broadcast an alert of where you are and in a panic.
So you'd be using, the idea is to use a wearable that ties into your system
yes.
and becomes integrated. Well, that might be easier for yeah. people in that sort of situation.
And that really goes on from the keyboard scenario where yeah. I said the keyboard is actually another device. So it doesn't have to necessarily be a mobile device. It's any kind of device. Keyboard is one of them. Hit these three keys, it sends this alert. Hit those two, shut down the school. We could have that same functionality on the pendant. And it's really up to you, to the user, to decide what function do you want to happen when I press that button around my neck.
What is, in your mind, what's the most serious threat we face nowadays in public sector for security? It's all kind of, it's a big question, I know, but sometimes people just have a very specific thing they think is the most significant. I'll tell you what mine is after you tell me yours.
Okay, I'm going to answer that in a little obtuse thing. I think it's not predicting behavior. Thinking that, you know, we saw this with 9/11, and we've seen this with the cars, people driving cars into under people on bridges and so on, is until it actually happens, it doesn't seem obvious. And I think there's a lot of things that we can that we're not aware of that are quite easy to do, that we need to be, think outside the box. What would you not do? What would you do that would be completely different, that would take people by surprise? I think that's the biggest security threat, because I think we live our lives in a kind of a routine, and a surprise when something happens that later on you think, well, that probably wasn't so surprising.
That is a good point. Here's my take on it. It's very similar. So I always say that all security is personal. Mm-hmm. All security is here and it's now. Or mm-hmm. I say it's individual here now, in the here and now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Really using your device helps me protect myself.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can really protect you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a second party, right? And the reason it's personal is that if I had a bodyguard and everything goes to hell, the first thing a bodyguard is going to do is take care of himself.
Yes.
Unless this is your child,
mm-hmm.
right? Or close relative or your spouse. Then mm-hmm. there's different response levels there.
It's human nature.
Human nature, right. But what's not going to happen is the bodyguard's going to, unless it's the president of the United States, throw their body on you. And the mm-hmm. guard's sitting here at the studio or at the parking lot across the street, or their best job is to observe and report,
mm-hmm.
right? They can't protect you, and they don't protect you. That's not actually their job function, nor is it the police's function,
mm-hmm.
right? So I'm with you on that one. We need to accept personal responsibility for our own security. If we see something local to us, because that's where we're most threatened,
mm-hmm.
and we act on it now, we're all safer.
Yes.
And that's why I look at it.
Yeah.
So you're right. So using these devices personally, not relying on your company to do it for you. By the way, there's all, you could, I guess if you, well, that's fine. Maybe somebody calling the show, that would be even better.
It's my parking.
Oh, your parking meter, we're almost over.
Yeah.
So I think that is really important, that if we can get people to understand that security is personal, it's here and now,
mm-hmm.
we would, how much safer we would be,
mm-hmm.
right? So the reason you and I are safe is because I'm not acting like an idiot and you're not acting like an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
But if we had a third guy over here sitting here shooting spitballs at us, he's acting like an idiot. If we don't do anything about it,
mm-hmm.
he keeps acting the fool, and mm-hmm. that escalates.
Yes.
And this is what happens in any shooter situation. The guy that comes back to shoot you, he was normal at one point
mm-hmm.
until he moved away.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important that people understand that these set of products like yourselves are effective because it gives you individual power
mm-hmm.
and information to make a decision. And that's what's so critical.
Yes. Actually, I want to place a graphic in your mind that we used to have, and I probably should have used it for the show, but
yeah.
we showed the traditional security, which is the building of the way you work, and there's a bubble around it, and that's the traditional security. What we're trying to do with Ambit is put little bubbles around people, and we used to have a graphic where people were walking around inside and outside the building, and there's a little bubble around them showing that they're protected. So that yeah. kind of idea that
information's power.
Mm-hmm,
it's all
exactly.
about that. Peter, this has been a really interesting show.
Thank you for having me.
Your website's right there, ambitmessaging.com. That's the best way to get a hold of the product.
Correct.
And would you come back and see us again, give us some more updates?
I would love to. Love to.
I think by the time the next incident happens, we'll be closer to having a group think mentality that says, you know what, we all got to work on products like yours to make this happen. And I think the reason people don't choose products that are out there is because they're afraid it sends a message that there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're not going to have a shooting at our school, so we're not going to have a product. Because if we do say we have a product, everybody's going to get nervous.
Yes.
And think there's a problem. And that's because we're lied to about everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a public's problem, of course. It's not much we can do about that. But I'm really excited about this product. I think it's going to be something that changes the game. Giving people individual power is very, very important. So thanks for coming on Security Guy
Welcome.
TV.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
and,
it.
And I hope our technical problems get worked out. And I guess, you know what? I don't have a way to end the show except to say goodbye.
Thanks very much for having me. Goodbye.
I'll put your Ambit graphic on that. And until next time, tune in next week on Security Guy TV and follow us on SecurityGuyTV.com. Thank you.